Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
And we've set out to review the UK's most popular cookbooks, those that you probably have at home and haven't opened in a while. We take one cookbook each episode to cook from and to stress test, digging out their best recipes, bringing them to life again, and hopefully inspiring you to do so too. Hello, Victoria.
Hello, Hannah. That was rhythmic.
It's like a national anthem.
Is it?
Yes, of the royal estate of Victoria. Dumb.
Victoria Dumb. Oh, yeah. I know it well. Bit depressing. Very poor country.
Very busy little country.
Busy little country, but no money. nothing to give.
Where you been? Who you seen? What you doing? What do you know?
Well, really big news in London this week, as you may be aware. I think you are aware. As finally, Salt Bae opened his restaurant.
Do you think that we talk a bit too much about Salt Bae?
We have mentioned him before on a podcast, maybe twice,
but a lot of people,
maybe more than that,
people don't necessarily know who he is. We should explain that a few years ago, a video.
Please explain.
I'm sorry, I'm reaching back. Meme. This is the kind of useless fucking information that I hold on to instead of really important stuff like my PIN number for my credit card. That Salt Bae went viral for this video of how he was salting. Was it a steak? It was a steak, right? It's always meat.
It's a steak.
He's a very meaty man. You know, in his in his outlook, not physically. And he was
physically, like, he's quite slight.
He is slight. He loves a round pair of sunglasses. And he was like holding up his hand in quite a, like, maybe if you were like miming like a swan or a periscope. And sprinkling the salt in a very extra way, and this shit went crazy viral, and thus Salt Bae was born.
He was born. I mean, I think he was already, he had restaurants, right?
Yeah, in, like, Dubai and stuff.
But thank God he's here now in London.
Where is he?
Is it Knightsbridge? I think it's Knightsbridge.
Of course, Knightsbridge, yeah.
I mean, he baffles me. The whole thing baffles me. So the restaurant was delayed, unfortunately, due to this little pandemic that we've been having.
So sad.
So lots of people are talking about it, but I don't think lots of people will be attending this restaurant. Attending, that's how you say. That's the verb you use for restaurants.
You sound like you're learning French.
I'm attending McDonald's this evening.
Why don't you think people will be going or attending?
Well, it's fucking expensive. And that's the point. Like, it's almost like a joke how expensive it is. Or, like, he does, like, these steaks that are covered in precious metals. Well, markedly gold. Precious. They're wrapped in gold.
Ugh.
And, like, have a lot of feelings about gold in food.
Me too.
And none of them are positive at all. Like, yeah. I don't want to eat gold. No. I want to wear it, maybe. Yeah. I want to, I don't need to shit it out, frankly. It's a waste of my money.
But it adds nothing.
No, it's not delicious.
No, it just makes something look a bit bougie.
Yeah. So they have a range of gold-covered steaks starting at £450.
Oh, my God. That's price, not weight, right?
I hope not. That's a big old cow.
I don't know.
Is it? I don't know. I actually got no idea. That might be the perfect size cow. A whole cow covered in gold. So that's the starting range. But you're, you know, if you wanted a tomahawk, which you can share, to be fair.
Oh, that's nice of him.
Covered in gold. But it is mostly bone. If you've ever seen a tomahawk, it's mostly bone. And that's £1,450.
Wow.
Plus, I'm sure your drinks, plus a 12.5% service charge at least.
Do you think you get potatoes with that?
No, I think you have to buy them separately. I saw on Twitter, because everybody talks about, you know, everyone talks about this. And this is like the beauty of it, right? Like this is his whole PR thing. It's like people will talk about how expensive it is. But I saw this receipt from his Miami restaurant, because of course he's got a fucking Miami restaurant.
Yeah.
And the bill, I don't know how many people there were, but like two French fries was like $30. Ugh. And yeah, the bill came to like $7,000.
Oh my God, do you remember Leonardo DiCaprio? There was like a video of, or a photo of him with Leonardo DiCaprio as well, right after he went viral, which made me really sad because I really like Leonardo DiCaprio. I was disappointed in him.
And he's all about saving the world. Why are you eating steak?
That's a very good point, yeah. Well, his girlfriends don't eat anything, so they make up for it. It's fine. But yeah, it's all just a bit gross, a bit distasteful. It's very flashy. He's very flashy. He's always wearing sunglasses. There was another video of him that was like where he was slicing some meat. The first one was the sprinkling of the salt, and then there was the slicing of the meat. And he was doing it in such a like weirdly grotesque and somewhat like erotic way. And it really chilled me to the bone. It was absolutely awful. I'm not a fan of that man.
If he's not there when you go to his restaurant, like, do you get a discount or do you pay more because he's there? Because if he sprinkles salt on your steak, is that a good thing? Like I don't know. I'm like, it is gross and it is horrible, but like also you're ripping off rich people, which, and footballers and Leonardo DiCaprio. So I don't really mind, you know, like it's, you know, if they're going to want to pay £1,400 for a steak plus the extras, then
yeah, more fool you.
Go ahead. Like, we'll all go to Hawksmoor and be happy.
Yeah. I'd like to check when he's salting the steak as well. You know, I'd like to see Samin Nosrat and him get together. Like a salt bay fat ass. Yeah.
Salt bay fat ass. I like that.
So yeah, he's grim, right?
I feel like he's not my guy. My salt bay is the ocean.
For her Vic's birthday, I got her a tote bag that said cookbooks are my nightclub, because she said this in a previous episode and I loved it very much.
True.
And now I know what round two next year's birthday will be. My soul is the ocean.
Happy for you, Salt Bear. You do you. We'll see you never.
Yeah, he's truly just going to fade away. But,
however,
anyway,
but
the book that we're talking about today is
Salt Bear's Guide to. Sorry, what is our book today? Tell me, please.
Marcella Hazan, Essentials of Classic Italian Cooking.
And this is our last book of the season.
We can't talk about that yet. I'll get a bit sad.
Okay.
What do you know about Marcel Hazan?
Literally nothing.
Well.
I tell you what I do know about her. The two sentences I read at the beginning of this book. She's Italian. She married a man who was a wine writer.
Well, I've got things to tell you about him. I've got things to tell you about her. I've got things to tell you about the book. I've got it all, Victoria. Don't you worry.
God, hit me with it.
So Marcella was born in 1924.
Same.
Your soul was. In Cesenatico, I'm going to say that's how that's pronounced. Is that good?
How's it go?
Cesenatico.
I like how you're in it. You soften your voice so much to speak Italian.
Aren't you grateful for that? So it's a little fishing village in Emilia-Romagna. Romagna? I don't know. I lost it. It's gone.
Love that.
Which is apparently Italy's most, or foremost, gastronomic region. So yeah, your foodiest part of Italy.
All the good shit up there, right? Parma ham. Bologna is up there.
Parmesan. Yeah. Balsamic.
It's all there.
Speaking of balsamic, I don't know if you heard me, but I said balsamic.
Speaking of balsamic, which we weren't.
Apparently she's credited with making balsamic quite mainstream, but then kind of regretted it because she saw it kind of being misused, and like
she liked it before it was cool. she was a balsamic hipster.
From the University of, she began her early childhood in Egypt, and she broke her arm there. And apparently, after nearly losing her arm to poor medical treatment, her father decided that they should go back to Italy, where he was from, for the surgery, and then they stayed there. And she was a teenager during World War II, and they moved to Lake Garda for a bit, not realizing that it would be one of the war's greatest targets. So that does not sound fun. And there was loads of bombings and stuff. When she was finished school, she studied natural sciences and biology in the University of Ferrara. I don't know if that's not right, but I like saying it like that.
The University of Prada.
I would totally go there. She met Victor, who was the love of her life. And there's a little bit, I'll tell you a little bit more about him later. He sounds like quite a big influence in her foodiness.
Right.
But apparently she couldn't really cook when she was growing up at all. It doesn't really make sense why, because apparently in her biography, she mentions that she had a mother. Do you have one of those?
Nah.
Never heard of them. And two grandmothers. The women in her life were apparently amazing cooks, but she couldn't do any of it until she married Victor and they moved to New York City. She couldn't speak any English at all.
Oh, shit.
And she couldn't cook. So, but when she was there, she wanted to learn how to cook for her new husband. Then she was kind of learning from him and learning from Italian cookbooks. And then kind of developed a bit of an instinct for it. So then she started going to this Chinese cooking class, as you do.
Okay.
You know, Chinese food and Italian food.
Very similar. Pretty much. Yeah. Soy sauce, balsamic. It's all the same.
Dumplings, ravioli.
Yeah.
The teacher quit this Chinese cooking class. And then Marcella's fellow students suggested that she start teaching them Italian food instead.
That's a pivot. I like it.
Pretty sweet. And then they got really popular and she was teaching them from her apartment in Manhattan. This was during the 60s. And then this big New York Times food hotshot critic writer guy, Craig Claiborne, came along for lunch, wrote a story, and then she just became this massive culinary star. It's just this kind of new Italian influence in America.
That sounds insane.
I know, right?
So she couldn't cook. She went to a class to learn how to cook and ended up taking that class.
Yeah.
Failing upwards, I've never heard. Like, there's shout out to her being a woman and that happening to her, because I know a lot of men that would happen to, and it would be, you know,
yeah,
the start of their course. But you know,
I guess it just shows you that even shit Italian cooks are probably better than the rest of us.
True.
The instinct, yeah, better than most. So then she kind of became this, like, Amazon talks about how she's America's premier teacher of Italian cooking. She later set up schools in New York and Bologna and Venice as well. So it wasn't just America. But yeah, so Victor, her husband, he had, apparently his English was great. And he's like kind of a bit of a presence all throughout her books. There's a lot of recipes that they have his name in them or something because he loves them or that he makes them at home. This one that's pasta alla moda di Victor, and it's like puts cream in to some pasta with parmesan and butter. You're a fucking nightmare, actually, that recipe. He would allow no one else to prepare this dish. And they were apparently really in love and stayed together both of their lifetimes, which is quite lovely. But he was a bit dismissive of her double doctorate when they met in the early 50s. He himself was going to be a writer. And
of course,
yeah, he spent, the New York Times said that he spent his time swanning about as a kind of faux country squire, which made me think of you.
Me?
You know how you're always swanning around like a faux country squire?
In my wellies and barber jacket.
Yeah, tweed.
Fucking hate the countryside.
But he was the son of Italian Jews who had fled with him to the US when he was 10. So they both had these crazy interesting childhoods just before World War II. And they were, his family were so opposed to him marrying someone who wasn't Jewish, which Marcella wasn't, that they cut him off when they got married.
Oh shit.
But apparently in time it kind of warmed back up and he returned to his father's fur business in New York. But Marcella writes in her biography that it was quite a while before his parents kind of overcame the hostility towards her. But yeah,
another time.
Yeah, yes. Totally. Fur shop, even that in itself. He was dismissive of her double doctorate, but he wants to go off selling furs. Okay, mate.
Yeah.
So she wrote books throughout her career. And as I said, she had cookery schools. In 1998, she retired from the schools and she and Victor moved to Longboat Key in Florida.
Lovely.
Oh, don't all people retire in Florida in the US?
Yeah, that's the rules. Once you get your American passport, that's it.
Yeah. Fergus Henderson in The Guardian, the chef behind St. John, wrote about how she wrote to him and invited him to come see her in Florida and to make him lunch or to make him dinner, and he kind of put it off, and then he realized what he was doing. Like, he had this amazing invitation from this really famous chef, so he flew over. Yeah. And it's a really nice piece, actually. We should share it when this comes out. But it's so interesting how all these chefs kind of connect in different ways, because there was something that I read later as well about how Marcella Hazan wasn't happy with her publisher of the first couple of books, and then Julia Child put her in touch with her publisher, and so you just realize that this whole network, even, you know, that was like the 60s or whatever, but the Fergus Henderson thing was only about 20 years ago. So it's just fascinating. Yeah, when Hazan was in Florida, then she found that she couldn't get loads of the Italian ingredients that she could get really easily in New York. And she decided to write a cookbook for people who were in the same position, who couldn't get kind of authentic stuff. So full accessibility points to Marcella there. And that was, she released a book in 2004 called Marcella Says. But yeah, just about kind of her personality, it seems like she was quite similar to Elizabeth David in a way. And I guess it's just like any of these women who had to succeed at this time, they had to be quite strong-willed, quite true to what they were doing. But yeah, there was lots in what I read up about how both her and Victor were quite difficult to work with, especially from a publisher's point of view. There was loads of like bitching about like the cover designs or like low numbers of first prints or stuff like that. And apparently even when she was teaching her classes, that she would, there's a bit that says she recalls that ordering her manicured students to clean squid would invariably provoke a battle of the wills, and it was a battle I never lost. So she sounds like quite a feisty character. But yeah, she did, I mean, amazing things. She's just, and then so this book combined two of her bestsellers before it, so the Classic Italian Cookbook and More Classic Italian Cooking. So it's brought all together, and then this was published in 1992. And so if you count the Classic Italian Cookbook, then this is the most mentioned cookbook on our list. It's number one.
Yeah, that's why we saved it till last.
And it's kind of pitched as this accessible, comprehensive guide to authentic Italian. It kind of takes you through different techniques and the contents of the Italian pantry, and then goes through like different stages on the menu. She's got chapters on things like soups and talks about like different areas in Italy. She says that a vegetable soup can tell you where you are in Italy almost as precisely as a map.
Nice.
And yeah, there's like menu ideas in the back. It obviously goes through pizza, pasta, risotto, every vegetable. She loves to smother a vegetable. Did you notice that?
She really does, yeah.
Every vegetable is vegetable, like fennel smothered in butter, some smothered in parmesan. Every single vegetable has a smothering recipe in there as well.
Yeah, it's like, just have one smothering recipe and say you can do this to everyone.
Yeah,
everyone.
To everyone. Smother everyone.
Not everyone.
If I had to choose how to die, I'd probably choose being smothered in butter and parmesan.
I mean, not me, obviously. I wouldn't enjoy that.
No, but you could be smothered in, I don't know. What would you be smothered in?
I don't know, like ramen?
Good, I like that. Cool. And then the most famous recipe from this book is probably this tomato sauce that's just like all over the internet. Maybe you've made it, I won't ask you yet, but it's this like very simple tomato sauce that has just three ingredients of tomatoes, preferably fresh, but in some recipes it says you can use those San Marzano tinned ones.
Yeah, yeah.
An onion and butter. You don't even have to chop the onion, you just like submerge it into the tomatoes and butter and you kind of reduce it all down. I've made it loads and it is really good, but it's definitely that comes from this book and it's probably the most internet famous tomato sauce ever. Yeah, just because it's so simple,
because people love to argue about tomato sauce, right?
Yeah,
and like as for pastas, and I feel like that one it's like it's labor intensive but it's also easy.
Yeah,
and it's always going to come up delicious.
Yeah,
I didn't make it for this. Okay. Spoiler alert, but we've made it before. Yeah, and it's delicious.
Do you know what I find interesting is a lot of people put a pinch of sugar in their tomato sauces. That one doesn't have a pinch of sugar. And I don't know if that's viewed as really inauthentic if you put like a pinch of sugar. We always do in my family.
Maybe it's if you have good tomatoes, you don't need the sugar.
Yeah.
Because if they're bad, not bad tomatoes, bad tomatoes or not good enough tomatoes. We're talking about tomatoes
again.
Yeah,
here we are.
Things, everyone drink. then I guess they're so acidic.
Yes.
That you need that sugar. But maybe if they're good, fresh or like the imported Samozzano ones.
Yes. Yeah.
They're delicious.
I guess that it's just a testament to good tomatoes, our ripe tomatoes.
Good tomatoes. That's our just, you know, band name of life.
Good
tomatoes.
Good tomatoes. But yeah, what were your first impressions of the book?
I was obviously excited about this book because we didn't have an Italian book apart from Jamie's book. But was that Italian book? Not really. But he had Italian food in there. Anyway, less about Jamie Oliver, more about this book.
Look, if we're saying that we've mentioned Ottolenghi in every episode, then that's me fangirling. We've also dissed Jamie Oliver. By we, I mean you. In every episode.
Sorry, Jamie. I love you.
It's all right.
I'll buy your new book to
together
compensate. I won't. I won't buy your new book. Yeah, it's a big one, but we knew that because it's two books. I was excited about it because it's Italian food and that's obviously different to other foods, notably French food. So I was excited. I like Italian food. I like lots of things about this book, actually. I really like the way that the recipes are laid out.
Mm-hmm.
So in the ingredients list, they are listed in order of use.
Yeah.
Which is good and not a given these days.
No.
But also she lists the equipment that you're going to need.
Yes, I love that. So
yeah,
good.
Absolutely love that. I think it's great.
A pastry brush or, yeah, a baking sheet or...
Yeah, an ovenproof casserole dish, fireproof casserole dish. Yeah, and I just think that's great. I think I also loved the pasta section.
Yeah.
Amazing because it's like vast. But also she doesn't expect you to make your own pasta. She talks about it and there's a couple of recipes in there, but she says, look, it's to buy is almost as good. And then she has these lists at the end of the pasta section. We love a list where you kind of can see the pasta shape that you like and she will guide you to the recipes in that book that go with that pasta shape. And I think that's great.
Me too.
So like, if you don't love fusilli, because I feel like a lot of people maybe don't, because it's a very normal, you know, a bit like you might be overexposed to fusilli. I don't know. Then fusilli. You don't.
I don't know why that's made me laugh.
I don't know. But anyway, if you don't like fusilli, then don't eat the fried courgettes with garlic and basil on page 181. But also this list is then split into fresh, as in you've made it.
Yeah.
Homemade is the word, not fresh. And, you know, factory made box dry pasta.
Which has less of a ring to it, let's be honest.
Yeah. So loved that. Yeah, what did you think?
I was very excited about this because I just feel like Italian is my go-to anyway. And I've kind of naturally veered towards a lot of the Italian stuff that in previous episodes, even if they're not necessarily Italian books. And you can get a bit like unimaginative about what to put in your pasta.
Yeah.
It was just fascinating to see so many different sauces and like quite simple as well. I found everything like quite, if you're not going to make your pasta, like it's relatively, there's not.
Yeah.
There's a lot of simple stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Tutto bene. Sorry. I'm
wow,
sorry.
Wow, racking up these Italian phrases today. I love it.
But how did you feel about no photos?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people talk about it in the Amazon reviews, actually.
That's interesting. I didn't feel like I missed out because, you know, pasta.
Yeah.
I can probably imagine it. One of the things I cooked, it was a bit different to what I'm used to. So I would have maybe liked some guidance on how that was to look.
Yes.
And a couple of other things, actually, like something I almost cooked and bought all the stuff and then just haven't had time, unfortunately, Yeah, I would have liked to understood like what that could have looked would have looked like.
Yeah,
but it's such a beast of a book. I understand why there's no photos. There is some nice illustrations.
Yeah,
but they're a bit like hoppies. You know, well, they're not as abstract as hoppies, but they're just like there's a lemon or you know, a picture of how to bone a
How to bone a what? What are we boning today?
I just saw a chicken. How to bone? Debone?
Breakdown. Yeah, I know, bone. Sometimes I think with these books as well, an old school food photo can age a cookbook like nothing else, right? So I think in some ways, these are kind of making themselves more timeless if they don't have a badly lit, unstyled food photos.
Yeah. My one observation is that there's a lot more butter involved in some of this cooking than maybe I would have thought.
Yeah.
In Italian cooking, you think you presume that their fat is olive oil over butter, but there's oftentimes it's both, right? I find that quite interesting.
Yeah. What did you cook?
What did I cook?
What did you cook from Marcella Hazan?
That's the second verse to the national anthem of Victoria Stan or wherever it was.
The essentials of classic Italian cooking.
I feel like I should march. I cooked two things. The first thing I made was the bolognese focaccia with bacon.
Oh, did you? I did. Nice.
I was excited. I was just like, oh, that's interesting. I think I might have to preface this by saying that I kind of only followed the recipe like mostly, and I'll get into it, into why. That's a lie. Like some bits didn't happen, but I'll explain why. Frankly, if I maybe wasn't doing this for the pod, I would have deviated even more so than I did. Mm. But we'll go through it.
Yeah.
So my first and maybe most integral deviation is that she wants you to make this whole recipe in the food processor. Like not the whole recipe, obviously you cook it in a food processor, but you make the dough in the food processor.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have a food processor big enough. I have my tiny mini chopper, shout out to that guy. But unless I was going to make a tiny focaccia for little mice, then that wasn't going to happen. So
how can you make like a bread dough in a food processor?
Well, she says that it worked.
Wow. I thought you meant like a KitchenAid, but then alas, no.
No, she alas. Means, alas. She means like with a blade.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if this is just like, you know, laziness on her part, which is, I think is great. I respect
great.
That.
Let's take it.
So the first thing you have to do is like get some bacon and chop it up in a processor, which I did do in my mini chopper. And then you just add all the other ingredients into the food processor.
Amazing.
And then it makes a dough and wow. But what I did was I chopped the thing is, and then I put it into my KitchenAid and just made the dough with the dough hook. So it's just bacon, about 100 grams of bacon chopped up really, really finely, plain flour, water, salt and sugar. That's it. There's no olive oil in the focaccia dough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which is my first like, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Made a lot of focaccia in my time. And I've never seen that before. You do put oil in the bowl while you're proving it.
Yeah, but that's not, yeah.
But then I've never eaten a focaccia from Bologna.
Maybe you haven't. And you know what they say. If you haven't eaten a focaccia from Bologna, then your name
then
is
shut
Victoria.
Up. Shut up commenting on this recipe. Just make it like it says, you idiot girl. So you make the dough, you let it rise for 3 or 4 hours, whatever. Then you decant that into an oiled 9x13 pan, preferably black. She writes in the thing that your pan should preferably be black. I only have a dark grey one, so again, I've deviated there.
It's pretty close. Why? What's the reasoning?
She doesn't give it reasoning. I don't know. So you leave that. 9x13 also, that's big. It's only 375 grams of flour and 300 grams of water.
To really stretch it out.
So you're looking at like, you know, you're going to get like a flatter focaccia. I generally prefer like a puffier, big,
me too,
juicier one. So
yeah.
But I was like, look, going to give this the benefit of the doubt. You know, nobody's calling me the best Italian food writer of all time. So what the fuck do I
can
know?
If you want.
Thank you. So yeah, so you leave that, you put it in the pan, you leave it to rise for 45 minutes, you know, spread out. In the meantime, you put a baking stone in the oven, and I have a pizza stone, so I was like, fuck it, let's try it her way. heat that up after it's risen a little bit more. You then, here's some more interesting stuff. You then are supposed to get a razor blade and crisscross score the top of this focaccia.
Rather than the dimpling with the fingers.
Yeah, none of that.
Interesting.
Crisscross the top and then egg wash it.
Oh.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, we'd eaten all the eggs for breakfast.
My God.
And so we had no eggs. So I milk washed it because I was like, I'm going to do what she says.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But I was very much like, this ain't right. That's interesting. But I did look at her other focaccia recipes and she doesn't do that with them. So this must be a Bologna thing.
Well, they all have variations, right? Because the Ligurian one, that they put that like brine on top of the dough.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, this just must be another mad. They're mental, aren't
they? Yeah. Yeah.
Just not.
That's, you know, regional. Who knew? Can't relate. So that goes into the oven on the baking stone in the tin for 30 minutes.
Okay.
And then you turn the oven off, take the bread out of the tin and put it onto the baking stone and close the door for 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
But the oven is off.
Okay. To get a crispy bun.
She doesn't say. She just tells you what to do. She doesn't tell you the reasoning behind
it. Shut
up
and you do what she says.
Shut up, close your door, put the thing on the baking stone. And then you get it out. Leave it to cool for a little bit. As I said, I was skeptical. Mm-hmm. I like a big puffy focaccia. This was much thinner, a bit like a Ligurian one. And also all the other ones, focaccias I've made, very oily.
Yes. So no olive oil. You don't even drizzle on olive oil after it comes out of the oven.
No, just so it's in the tray and in the bowl when you're proving. I probably put maybe a bit more than she would have liked in the tray.
Yeah.
So I didn't, honestly, didn't really have that much high hopes for it. But it was great.
Oh, yay.
It was really good. The reason, I imagine, she doesn't, like I said, she isn't explaining this, but I imagine the reason for no olive oil is because you get all your fat from the bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of crispy on the outside and much thinner, but it was perfectly done in the middle, like soft and airy and lovely. And then because you've like food processed the bacon, it's that the piece is like minuscule, so it's not like you're not getting big chunks of bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And just it added this real like lovely salty,
yes,
umami flavor. And nice. It was, we ate so much of it like warm out the oven, like, and
the only way.
It was just I would absolutely would make it again, and I don't know if I would even make it in a small, I would try it maybe in a smaller pan.
Yeah,
but yeah, I would absolutely make it again. It was delicious.
Nice.
I was into it.
Do you think I could try it with corn bacon then? Is that what you're saying?
I think it would work perfectly. Yeah, she didn't, that was the only recipe she had for like this bolognese style one, so I don't know if it's always has bacon or if it's just like a I don't know.
Sometimes there are like a type of, there's a type of dish or something, like say like a frittata or something, it's not a frittata, but the only then recipe will be a meat one and you're like, oh okay, I won't have that one then.
Yeah.
Or you could just leave it out, but like, you know that it's going to be missing something.
Yeah, like this, you couldn't, probably shouldn't leave the bacon out.
Capers.
Yeah, capers.
Nature's bacon.
Nature's tiny bacon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Right, my second thing, I'll whiz through because I feel like I talked about that bread for a long time, is the baked rigatoni with bolognese meat sauce.
Oh, so we're staying in Bologna.
Staying in Bologna. I've been to Bologna and I've eaten the fucking bolognese meat sauce and it was incredible. So,
no, totally. That I saw that. I love that. A rigatoni as well is one of my favourite pasta shapes. It's so good.
That's it. And I feel like I wanted to make... It's fun to make a bolognese, and it is like long. I'll talk about it. It's long, but I feel like don't fuck around with the bolognese. I'm ignoring that. You didn't hear that. Hannah said bolognese.
When I talk, you say all these insightful things like, oh, and what kind of dish did you use for that? And then I just sit here thinking of shit puns.
Yes, I don't think it's worth doing a bolognese sauce unless you're doing it long, if you're spending a long time doing it, because what's the point? It's basically a culmination of two different recipes baked with rigatoni. And I just need to tell you why I couldn't just make the bolognese sauce and eat it with pasta. And that is because we talked about overexposure to fusilli earlier, but I had an overexposure to spaghetti bolognese as a young person.
Oh, I mean, didn't everybody, wasn't that like one of the main days of our childhood bringing up, and like probably not the most authentic, to be fair.
Look, my mom's spaghetti bolognese is great. I love her.
Same here.
She does it great. But like my younger brother really liked it and demanded it pretty much at every meal for about 5 years. And
imbecile.
Yeah. And I feel like I can't eat it any longer.
Yeah,
sometimes even now my mom be like, I've made spaghetti bolognese. And I'm like, oh.
Woman.
Says it to my brother. I'm happy for you. And I'm like, you eat that spaghetti bolognese, but what else do you have? So this was a good way of using it in a different way. You know, I thought about lasagna, but I always feel like the payoff is never as good as the time and energy it takes to make lasagna when you could just buy it from the shop.
I disagree.
I love lasagna.
Wow.
I love it. I think it's great. But just making it is hard and long.
Oh, I beg to differ. Like, I feel like the ones you buy in the shop are shit.
I mean, yeah.
The ones you make at home are good.
True. I don't think the difference there is big enough for me to make it.
It's a big difference. This is one of our points of difference here.
Maybe. I'll
make you my bolognese and we'll see. Well, I'll make you my lasagna, complete with corn mince. You buckle up there.
I would love it.
And we'll see what you think. But anyway.
Right. So you do her bolognese, which takes at least 4 hours. So it's very standard sauce. It is onion, celery and carrots. The classic, the trifecta. It makes a big old recipe. 85 grams of onion. I used about an onion and a bit. 3 sticks of celery, 4 medium carrots.
Why say 4 carrots, but then 85 grams of onion? That is my one thing. It was one of mine as well. It was like 2 teaspoons of chopped garlic. What are we talking in cloves here, Marcella? That's what I need to know.
Yeah. I mean, you got to shout out to her because she has both metric and imperial measurements for all of our recipes, so we love her for that.
Have we mentioned
that we don't like cups or measurements that you can't understand? Oil and butter in the pan first, interestingly. Ground beef, only 350 grams. It's a big recipe, so I thought that was interesting. Salt, pepper, milk. So you do a little milk thing, so after you've put the beef in and that's kind of cooked down a little bit, you add milk, which is I think quite traditional, but a method that is skipped here.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that came up when I was reading about her, actually, was this kind of, that was revolutionary, I think, at the time, to hear that you put milk in this ragu, and it was a total game changer for loads of people.
Yeah, milk and not as much tomato as you would think. You know, I feel like everyone knows that now, but like when we were growing up, like it was a tomato sauce with beef in it. Nutmeg, interestingly. Wine. So you put the milk in, you let that kind of soak up until there's no milk left.
Yeah.
You do the same with the wine. Mm-hmm. And then once the wine has kind of evaporated, then you put 500 grams of tinned imported Italian plum tomatoes in. Okay. So that was good. So only 500 grams. Things come in 400 gram cans here. So that was a thing. But it's not like you can't use a jar of tomatoes somewhere else. So you just kind of, that all goes in at different stages, like I said, evaporates down, blah blah blah, and then once the tomatoes are in, you just leave it to simmer. She talks about it like it needs to be simmering, but only like the very rare bubble to be coming up. I'm doing a little hand gesture
on the very rare bubble
to show you about bubbles. Rare bubbles for 3 to 4 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah, and she says, as long as you finish it in the same day, if you need to go out and come back, turning it off, it's fine.
Okay.
And you can top it up with water. It just sits on the hob. It's uncovered, interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to top mine up with water. It seemed to have enough, which was good. And makes your house smell delicious.
I'm sorry.
Which is great. So once that's done, you pop some pasta on, your rigatoni. Mm-hmm. Because that's such a big recipe, she wants 675 grams of rigatoni.
Wow.
I don't have a dish big enough to bake all of that in. So I halved the recipe and now we've got like bolognese sauce.
Yes.
For the freezer. And then you make a bechamel, mm-hmm. her bechamel, mm-hmm. which is fine. Really straightforward bechamel. No pepper in the bechamel, which I would always put some pepper in, but maybe that's just me. And then you just mix it all together and bake it.
Nice.
Oh, you put some Parmesan whilst you're mixing it through.
Yeah.
And then you sprinkle on some Parmesan on the top. You only put it in the oven for like 10 minutes just to get a crust on it. Right. So it's not like really crusty on top, but it's only got a little bit of Parmesan anyway. Like I think she says like 2 tablespoons over the top. And it's like I cooked it in like my La Creuset casserole dish. Yeah. And then it comes out, you leave it to sit for a bit. Fucking nice. Oh, so it tastes like a lasagna because you put a bechamel through it.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of creamy and nice, but you're not, it's not like layered in the same way. Because when I read it, I was like, I presumed it would be layered.
Yeah.
A bit like a lasagna, like you put the bechamel on top, but you mix it through, which I was like, that's interesting.
Nice.
But I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I really, really, really liked it. It's a labor of love, but
right,
it's a really like hearty, warming dish.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds, I feel like you can't go wrong if you've got like meat eaters. So I was very happy to have it.
Delicious. Would you make it again?
Yeah, definitely. Even better, like the next day. Like I had it today for lunch, and it was great.
Oh yeah,
it's worth it. Just freeze it and have it, and like such an easy, good dinner. Then like just a sauce on its own to like put with spaghetti or. Well, she says never spaghetti. Actually, the Italians would never put it with spaghetti. You just have with tagliatelle or even rigatoni or other penne, things like that.
Take that, little brother.
Yeah, take that, Jonathan. You little prick. Just joking. Love you. Anyway, what did you make? Probably not meat sauce and bacon focaccia, right? So
I also made two things, but I guess it's a similar vibe in that I made one pasta and one kind of bready thing.
Oh, yay.
Which I kind of only discovered that whole section towards the end with the bread and stuff, like quite late. And then I was oh my God, this is great. I need to do something here.
I was a bit sad. I was like, oh, there's no pizza or no like focaccia or whatever. And then, it's right at the end after the dessert. So, that's a critique.
Save the best to last. The pasta that I made was, I guess it's just the recipe is just for the sauce, and she recommends what pasta shape you should put it with. But it was as if we didn't have enough courgettes in our lives. It should be the courgette circle. Courgette sauce with basil and beaten egg yolk.
Ooh, beaten egg yolk.
Yeah. So I was thinking maybe it's like, a little veggie carbonara kind of vibe. Maybe this is the closest that we get to it.
Yeah, it sounds glossy. That's what I was.
You just kind of you soak some courgettes. You soak them whole, which is weird, for 20 minutes in cold water and then wash them free of all grit.
Whole, not peeled.
Peeled, no. I think they were just dirty little courgettes that she's using. Ugh. I don't know.
Dirty I guess she presumes courgette. You're making them in your dirty little courgettes. That's a bad name of the week. I guess she presumes you're making them in your garden because they're very easy to making them. Growing, I think, is the right verb. I'm doing really good with my verbs.
But, then you kind of cut them into long sticks, 3 inches long, and you pat them dry. And then you heat some oil. You fry the strips of courgette in the oil. And you kind of have to do that in batches just until they're like a light brown color, she says.
So they're not like, you haven't like breaded them or battered them. They're just straight up fried?
Straight up fried. And then at the same time, you kind of get your pasta going. So she says to use fusilli. If you want.
Beware of overexposure.
Or the long corkscrew strands. And like, as ever, I often do my cooking for this on a Sunday night when all the good shops are shut and I'm just going to like a shitty local one. But I got this Mafaldine pasta. Mafaldine. Oh. That's fucking awful pronunciation, I'm sure. But it's like a long, wavy kind of guy. It's like tagliatelle. It's like a slightly wavier tagliatelle.
Oh yeah, it looks fun.
Yeah, fun pasta. So you get that cooking, then you kind of pour out the oil from the frying pan after you've taken the courgettes out, obviously, and then you put in some butter and you let the butter foam, and then you've like mixed a bit of I think it's like a tablespoon of flour in with like 6 tablespoons of milk, so you're making like effectively like a little roux.
Yeah.
So you put that flour and milk into the butter, and then you stir that for half a minute, add a pinch of salt, and then you put in your courgette strips into there. So they get kind of coated in this like little like roux kind of bechamel-y kind of sauce.
Yeah.
Cook that for about a minute so the courgettes are all coated. And then you take it off the heat and you put in a bit more butter. To your point, there is a fair bit of butter in this. And beaten egg yolk. So it creates this kind of like emulsified, like quite creamy sauce. And then you literally just put, you add your pasta into that sauce and you put in some Parmesan and Romano cheese, which I just did Parmesan. Cause
you can't get that easily here.
No, really not. And then some torn up basil leaves. So you just pop in some cheeses and basil leaves and you just toss it all together and then you serve it.
That sounds great. I've never heard anything like that before.
Exactly, right? I hadn't heard of anything like that. And I thought that's so interesting and doable. And
yeah,
it was delicious. It was really, really delicious. I really rate her seasoning, actually. She always like tells you when to season and how much. And it's always like spot on, I think. Yeah. And she does that quite a lot with that recipe. So it was just really delicious. Just really, really nice. I don't make courgette with pasta that much, but
what kind of like texture does the courgette end up at?
I guess it's like quite soft, but then it gets like a bit creamy in that sauce. And then it's because they're long strips and you've got, I use like a longish pasta. Mm. It's all just like kind of a lovely little forkful that you're swirling up together. Yeah. But it still has a bit of texture. It's not too, it's not like completely overcooked or anything. It's a bit of crunch from the frying. So yeah, I would 100% do that again on like,
wow,
as a go-to supper. It was really, really delicious.
Yeah, that sounds great and very original.
Very original. I love it. Just like me. Just like me.
I'm excited to see the picture of that.
Yes. Don't get too excited. As you know, my photos are always pretty shit. And then the second thing I made was just today, actually. You don't need to know that, but there you go. And it was this thing called that I'd never heard of before, called a sfoncini. Sfoncini.
Sfoncini? Oh.
Sfincuni. And they're in the focaccia pizza bread section.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, what's this? And basically, it's like a pizza dough base, very thin, and then like a filling. And then you put more pizza dough on top, crimp it all together, and you make effectively like
a
pizza pie.
Allora,
it's a pizza pie.
I think I did see these. They sound great.
Yeah. There's a little, it's from Palermo. There's a little intro on page 669. It says that these are to Palermo what pizza is to Naples and the rest of the world. Baked dough supporting a topping. And yeah, two thin round layers of firm dough, which enclose a stuffing called the conza. And they're sealed all around. So the original recipe that she uses is with meat and cheese. Doesn't name the meat, but
meat. Any meat.
But then she gives some variations, and one of them is broccoli and ricotta.
Ooh.
So that's what I did. So it was like a broccoli and ricotta sfincuni.
I love that. It's a bit like, you know, Domino's double decker pizza. but better.
Yeah. Doesn't that have toppings on top?
Yeah, it does.
Yes, it was just a filling. But yeah, so the dough was tricky, I will say that. It was like just plain flour, yeast, water, salt, tablespoon of olive oil, a little bit of milk as well. She likes her milk, pinch of sugar, and you kind of mix it all together. And she gives you instructions whether you're doing it by hand or by food processor, actually, which I didn't have one. So I was doing it by hand, but it was very sticky. It was so sticky. And you know, when like I really need someone to say in a recipe, the dough will be really sticky, but don't worry or something, because otherwise it was just like, she does say it shouldn't. The dough should feel soft and compact and no longer stick to the hands, but it was really sticky. So I did end up adding like quite a lot of extra flour.
Yeah.
I was worried that it was really going to affect it, but there was just no other way to deal with it. So you kind of are meant to do this like whole slapping against the counter thing. And I was just like, I was kind of slapping it and bits were flying. It was all very wet.
Your ceiling's ruined. Yeah,
it was just a bit comedy. But I persevered because I'm a trooper that way and just kept adding flour. And then you kind of managed, I just like needed it and it seemed like it was in a better place. So then I put it aside and then you leave it to rise. She said for 3 hours or until it's doubled in size. But I don't know if my kitchen is like a fucking sauna or something. It was doubled in like 2 hours or something. So again, I was a little bit worried that it was going to be overproofed. But anyway.
I also think that like yeast technology has moved on since this book was written. And like a lot of these like older baking books have were written.
Yeah. They're not strong.
So I think that, you know, they like fast action yeast. They're like fucking, I mean like fast.
Yeah. Totally. I agree. But in the meantime, while that's rising, you can get on with your filling, which is just basically you boil up some broccoli. You don't boil it for a very long time because you don't want it gets cooked again later. And then you drain it, chop it into 1-inch pieces. And then this is when your 2 teaspoons of chopped garlic come in. You fry off 2 teaspoons of chopped garlic in 4 tablespoons of olive oil. It smells so good. Mm. Garlicky broccoli. It's just a great thing.
Yeah.
So, you kind of cook that garlic and then you put the chopped broccoli in with the garlic and the olive oil and you add some salt and then you just cook that for 5 minutes all together so it gets to know each other. And then you set that aside and you let it cool completely. Mine was still a bit warm. But anyway, I wanted to work while the dough was still okay. You're meant to have a baking stone and a peel so that you can like put the baking stone in to preheat and then you can like put the thing on the peel and shove it in on the stone. I didn't have any of those things, of course. So I just put in a baking tray to preheat in the oven and then I prepped the dough on like a piece of greaseproof.
Nice.
And then just put it in. So yeah, then you get your greaseproof because I did. You put some like polenta or cornmeal on the base and then you're meant to roll out the dough to like 10 inches diameter. But it was again like really fucking sticky, so I ended up just like, you know when you see them like making pizza and they're like just stretching it by hand,
yeah, like just pulling it, yeah.
I was just doing that because I was like, fuck, this is just so sticky. So I thought it had all gone horribly wrong, but it turned out okay. So then once you've got that stretched out, you put a tablespoon of breadcrumbs onto the base, you put on bread over loads of ricotta onto the breadcrumbs, then you put the broccoli with the garlic and stuff on top of there, and then you put grated parmesan on top.
Of course.
I took a picture before it went in the oven because it just looks so pretty. You know the little cloud of parmesan that I love. And then you put more breadcrumbs on top and then you drizzle some olive oil on top. And then you put your second pastry or your second dough lid on top of that.
Yeah.
And again, that was hard. I was like trying to stretch it out and then you kind of tuck it under the bottom base so that it doesn't, and there was a couple of like little thin bits on top and I thought that's going to explode, but it was fine in the end. And then you just put it in the oven and you bake it for like 25 minutes. She nice. Says to you brush the top layer with water and then bake it for 25 minutes, and then she says to leave it for like half an hour when it gets out of the oven, which I really like. You said you had to leave something of yours for a couple
the rigatoni, you have to rest it,
so it's right, right? Because when it's too hot, it just doesn't taste of anything. And then, you slice it and eat it.
That sounds great.
And it was so good. It was really, really, really good because I guess because it's such a wet dough, if you think of a classic pizza dough and you're having two layers of that, that's going to be really heavy, right? But this one, because it's quite wet, is really thin and light and not that heavy all in all. And it was just so delicious. I do think you could play around and like, if you wanted like a slightly stronger cheese than ricotta in there, you could definitely do that. And she does say that you should play around with fillings and stuff, but would 100% make that again. It was bloody great. Loved it.
I can imagine like just like being in Italy and like just picking up a slice of that from somewhere and like walking around with it like in a little paper bag or something. And like, it'd be so good. Oh, like
it was amazing.
Tomatoey one even or...
The variations that she has sound really good. There's the meat and cheese one, there's one with tomato and anchovy that sounds great, and that
sounds great.
Would really, really recommend that. It was delicious.
Fun.
I guess the only thing is you have to be fairly confident with dough, like with yeast dough, because it was a bit fiddly at times, and I'm sure that whatever I ended up with probably wasn't the authentic version because I had to add so much flour to make it not sticky, but still tasted good.
I added quite a bit of flour to my focaccia dough as well because I thought it was too wet. Mm. So I don't know if it's just it's a flour thing. Yeah.
Or the water was less wet back in the day, maybe.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that you saw that you wanted to make?
Yeah, loads actually. I've got many, many little tabs. Aubergine cubes, mushroom style.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It was basically literally that, just like cubes of aubergine cooked up with oil and parsley, like you would with beautiful like mushrooms, and I just, that really like, caught my eye because I love mushrooms and I love all the aubergine recipes. Actually, I thought it looked great. Yeah. Breaded aubergine cutlets, mm-hmm. aubergine parm, tomato sauce with pancetta and chili pepper. That sounds great. Basically everything. So I've tabbed the tomato sauce with onion and butter because I was like, should I make that?
Yeah.
A lot of the soups looked lovely. Lentil soup with pasta, bacon and garlic. Sounds great. A lot of bacon happening in here. Honestly, there was absolutely loads of stuff that I wanted to make, and I think I will. Like, the pasta is so good, even just for inspiration.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when you're looking for stuff.
Yeah.
How about you?
I thought the bruschetta and stuff would be interesting to try her way.
Yeah.
Because it's simple and delicious, but I bet she does it really well. There was, I know you're not a big frittata person, but there was a whole frittata chapter that I thought looked nice. There was like a mad one, it was like a stuffed spaghetti frittata with tomato and mozzarella, and there's ham in there too, but I'd obviously leave it out. But you make like two layers of frittata sandwiching a filling of pasta, so it sounds nuts. I think I'm just really into all this mad shit. Like, it's like the timpano thing from Big Night, right? I'm obsessed with these layered things that they do in Italian food. But yeah, I mean, I think the pizza would be really fun to try as well, and a couple of the desserts. There's a lot of almonds. French and Italians just love an almond, but
it's true.
There was an olive oil cake that I thought could be really, really nice to try. They were all like very like simple kind of rustic desserts, and I thought that sounded good.
Yeah. Frankly, after you've eaten
that much
an Italian meal.
That's so true.
Loved it.
I loved it too, and I feel like it's probably going to be my go-to Italian book now.
Yeah. Should we rate?
Let's rate.
Let's rate. Let me tell you quickly about our rating system. So every episode we rate the book out of 5, but we change the rating every week based on the chef or the book or something funny that we find within. So for example, we rated Delia Smith out of eggs because she is obsessed with eggs.
Loves an egg.
Hate to bring him up again, but Jamie Oliver, we rated him out of photos of Jamie Oliver because there was lots of those in that book. And so Marcella, we are going to rate out of smothered vegetables.
I love it. I just love it.
I love it too.
There's just so
like,
many.
Yeah, let us know what you would like to be smothered in. If you were in this recipe book, I've said ramen. Hannah is happy with butter and cheese.
Yeah, we're asking you.
Tell us what you should be. Yes, and we rate out of 5 categories, and those categories are usability and accessibility. That's one. Ingredients used, aesthetics. Is the book veggie friendly? And inspirability. Do we love it? Are we inspired by it? So, Hannah, how many smothered vegetables are you giving this book?
Okay, for usability and accessibility, that's 1. I'm giving it 1 because everything was really easy to find and easy to... You could tell at times that she taught cookery, right? Because she doesn't assume anything. It's all pretty descriptive. Ingredients used, also another 1. Gonna give that 1. There was nothing that was too hard to find. Aesthetics. Might just give it a 0.5 on aesthetics. Because whilst I've previously awarded full points on the kudos of having a certain book on your bookshelf, which I think would also apply to this one, I think there could be more illustrations maybe or something.
Yeah.
Veggie friendly, I'm actually going to give it 1 because there is a lot of veggie stuff in here. And I did say earlier that there's sometimes a dish that doesn't have a veggie one, but you could leave the meat out most of the time. There was something else going on in there that was interesting. And there's a whole... like vegetable sections and everything, so even if they are smothered, so yeah. And inspirability, I'm gonna give it 1 as well, so I'm giving it 4.5 smothered vegetables.
Nice.
What about you?
So I feel like I'm the same. So I was actually gonna dock 0.5 for veggie friendliness.
Okay.
But I'm gonna take your lead because you are the veggie.
Yeah.
And completely give it a 1. And I also was docking 0.5 for aesthetics because like I said, it's nice, but you know, there are no pictures, and some of the time, you know, you need that guidance when it's something you haven't. So I would have liked that, but yes, I'm inspired.
Yes.
Ingredients, all that stuff, usability, brilliant. So 4.5 smothered vegetables.
Woo. Do we think
out of 5,
is it deserving of its top place on the lists?
I'm gonna say yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Like, I would, you know, again, like we would say this, I'd like to be there at the time it came out and understand, like, what a difference this made. And, like, was this, like, the first Italian cookbook that...
I understand that it was, like, the first kind of comprehensive... Well, the two before it were, right? And then this version added, like, 50 new recipes or something. So then it became even more of a encyclopedia. But, yeah, my understanding is that there was nothing really else out at that time that kind of brought everything together in such a easy way, I guess.
Yeah, it still works. It's not like some of the French books that we've had that are just like
a bit age.
It's got brain in it and it's got, you know, it's got stuff that just doesn't make sense. Like, it's all just for ingredients that you can still buy and are still available and
still tastes great. Italian food, man.
I would love to know her views on American Italian cooking. Like, seeing as she lived in New York and, like, it's so different, right? It's not the same at all. Like, it's a really specific genre of food.
Yeah.
Like, baked ziti and other things. So, yeah, I've...
Deep fried ravioli.
Yeah.
She does deep fried... There are, like, fried kind of pasta-y dumplings or something in here as well. And I was thinking that's probably the predecessor to fried ravioli, right? Like, it's just... From what I can understand, she was quite explicit about it. If she didn't think something should be on something, she would say it. So I think she might have a thing or two to say about the way it's gone. What's happened here?
Haven't we all? Red sauce.
That's our last book.
So that's it.
What are we going to do for the last episode?
Just make stupid jokes and puns. bitch about Jamie Oliver, I guess. Why change a habit of a lifetime?
I'm going to try and sell this a little bit better than Meg.
No.
We will be doing one last episode, episode 20, and it will be a delight to your ears. But we'll look at some of the books that we didn't cover on the list and why. And look back at some of our favourite moments in the episodes.
Yeah, it's going to be nice.
Whatever else we can come up with between now and then.
There probably will be mention of Ottolenghi and Jamie Oliver and French food. Well, it has to be because we've done a lot of French books. But it will be fun.
It will be
fun. We've done 19 books.
Yeah. And then we'll wrap the season. Ooh.
That's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Anyway, we'll tell you more about that the next time. And thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Bye.
And go buy this book. Bye.
Go buy the book. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, and if you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review as it helps others to find us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram, @cookbookcircle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, please don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye! Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.